Lorianne Yamanaka's latest novel is Behold the Many. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Over the years, her poetry and fiction have been acclaimed for weaving Hawaii's varied languages and dialects into a prose style that is, according to Publishers Weekly, at turns beautiful and harsh. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Lorianne back to my show today. Hello.
I hate to be the corrector of all things, but Lois Ann.
Lois Ann, what did I say? Lorianne?
I get that all the time.
No, but I looked right at Lois Ann on this piece of paper and said, Lori, I have no idea why. That's my dyslexia coming out, I guess. This book takes place in Oahu at the beginning of the 20th century. What was happening in Hawaii at that time?
Great change, great upheavals, a lot of politics, a lot of cowboys, a lot of money makers. I mean, it was just a happening town.
But it wasn't a tourist attraction yet, was it?
Oh, no. It was still kind of, it was a town on the verge of the plantations becoming prominent, the Big Five. It was a bustling place, a seaport still. A lot of the missionaries becoming landowners.
So it, to some degree, a transitional period where Hawaii in some ways becomes what it became.
Right. And then we have a kingdom that's almost not going to be a kingdom. So there's all of that happening. The beginning of the presence of the American military.
It takes place, the book, in Oahu. But you were born on the island of Molokai, which is a very different sort of place, isn't it?
Yeah, Molokai is an island that has not changed for a number of centuries. I mean, it pretty much stays the same. I think what it is most famous for is the leper colony that was developed on the rugged north shore of the island in 1886.
And that was the subject of a recent interview I did on this show. There's a wonderful new book about it.
Oh, yeah. I read in the paper, you know, some of the patients who are still living, because the American government turned it into a federal park. It's under the federal park system now. But some of the patients who are still survivors of Hansen's disease, they've not been too happy with that book. Yeah, but, you know, I haven't read it.
You'll find it interesting. You know, people are often unhappy for their own reasons. That doesn't mean the book isn't valuable on some level. Mm-hmm. But that leper colony must have been at the back of your head for some of the thinking you have about disease in this book.
Yeah, because by the time tuberculosis came around and the sanatorium was built at Liahi Hospital, which is on the slopes of Diamond Head.
Really? And such a beautiful site.
And it's still there. And, you know, there's no treatment center or treatment place for children of plantation workers. So the orphanages became the repositories or depositories. That's where they just would leave their sick children. And then sometimes the children died there. But, of course, you know, leprosy, the way they had to quarantine people for leprosy in that way, with TB, it was a great kind of scare.
And in this book, two of the children have died as well. The girls at the center of the story grew up with a Portuguese father and a Japanese mother. Mm-hmm. Did the diversity of Hawaii's population also occur around the time that this book is set? Or is that something that happened earlier?
Odd. I mean, that's what's odd for me when I was developing this story, is that what I understood about these characters that are based upon historical figures, that they were half Portuguese and they were half Japanese, which would have been very unusual, because Japanese married Japanese and Portuguese married Portuguese and Filipino married Filipino, you know. And so it was very unusual. It was an unusual circumstance for this woman to be in, you know, the Portuguese camp among the Portuguese.
And yet, when you go to Hawaii, you're very aware of the fact that there was such a strong Portuguese presence. It's something that surprised me, because mm-hmm. I'd never associated the Portuguese. Yes, the Japanese. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Chinese. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the local Hawaiians. But where did the Portuguese come from?
Man, they were such tough people. They were seafaring women and men and children who came on board the SS Priscilla from the Azores and from Madeira, and they came around the horn. I mean, they were like, they brought the women and the children with them, And these are tough people.
And you said that people tend to live separate from each other, even though there were so many different groups?
Well, the plantation owners who were white, they didn't want the different racial groups to unionize. So by keeping them separate in separate habitations and separate quarters and separate camps, they were called, they weren't able to, you know, get together and unionize. And they also spread rumors about each other, why we needed to be afraid of the Filipino, why the Portuguese were no good, why the Chinese, and you know, these jealousies and things that kept people apart were important for the owners.
Although they all had something in common, really poor working conditions.
Yeah, everybody was in the same boat, but they really were wary of each other and, you know, afraid of each other.
Is the combination of so many cultures and languages in Hawaii what prompted the linguistic diversity there? A lot of your writing is in Pidgin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is Pidgin a distinct dialect?
Pidgin is a language. To me, it's my first language. So I don't know if it's so much a dialect as it has the qualities of a language.
It has its own rules.
Right, right. So the linguistics department at the University of Hawaii has said that Pidgin is a language. So that's how they're going to define it. But it's really the combination of all the different ethnic groups and then the music or the cadence and the syntax of Pidgin is based upon the native Hawaiian language.
And the book tells us, actually a little biography on the back of the book, that your next novel will be all in Pidgin. Well, who would be mm-hmm. able to read that?
I don't know.
People in Hawaii.
Well, you know, we read Faulkner, yeah. I mean, not that I'm putting myself in the same category as Faulkner, but, you know, because I read William Faulkner, I thought I should just go and dig my own grave and then bury myself, yeah.
Where Benji, is mentally retarded, writes a whole 100-something pages.
And then we follow,
Sound
you
and
know.
Fury.
Jeez. So that was, you know, so after that, I thought, you know what, people can read Faulkner, they can read me.
Lois Ann Yamanaka's latest novel is Behold the Many. It is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. And the story begins with three sisters. Their family life seems less than ideal, and they don't have a very good relationship mm-hmm. with their parents either. Was this, again, something typical, that kids would just wind up in an orphanage like this?
I think, you know, if you were sick and you didn't have money, pretty much the Department of Health just came and kind of picked you up one day and took you away. And
this is a colonial condition, do you think?
I think this is like Big Brother. And they were taken to a sanatorium or to an orphanage and left there. Parents, because they didn't have a way of getting there, they would have to leave their work, which they couldn't do. They would have to go on foot, you know, and they were very secluded. So this orphanage that I based St. Joseph's upon is way, 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 way inside the mountain, and you can't get there. I mean, at one point, it turns into a dirt road, and if you had a bicycle, you rode your bike, you had to carry your bike.
Wow.
But the children were just left there to survive or to die.
It's revealed right on the book jacket that Leah and Aki don't make it to adulthood, so I'm not mm-hmm. ruining anything by mentioning that. But their voices are still very much a part of the rest of the book. And it's kind of a ghost story as mm-hmm. much as anything else. Does belief in ghosts, is that something that's basic to the culture in Hawaii?
You know, well, for me anyway, it's basic to the culture in Hawaii. There's a Molokai, I was going to also say, is the spirit entrance and exit, spirit entryway to the world and exit, you know, from the world. But for me, anyway, my son is autistic. They say that autistic children have a highly developed sixth sense. When we moved into our home in Kalihi Valley, my son attracted these little children, and I didn't know where they were from. I didn't know what was going on, but after, you know, having the house blessed and having people come and help me, we were able to find out that they were indeed these orphaned children from the orphanage that is still two blocks up the street from where we live.
And you've written a number of books for children.
Mm-hmm.
The most recent one came out last May, didn't it? So is that because you have an autistic son or because you're so interested in at-risk children in general?
I think having a child with special needs has just made me a little bit more vigilant about, you know, his the sound of his voice and what he would say and how he would say it and what he is all about. And so, you know, and then sometimes in many ways, the children who don't survive at the orphanage, Aki and Leah, you know, when they are separated from their mother, I often imagine my own child because he didn't understand or doesn't understand, you know, and separation for him becomes very dramatic, you know.
Well, these girls haunt their sister, but not their brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Because you think sisters have a special kind of relationship?
I think because she was left at the orphanage and the mistake was that they were going to go home. So the mother always said, we're going to bring you home. Don't worry, you'll get well, you'll come home. But what happens is they die before they go home. So they are supposed to go home to God, but they end up wanting to go home. So they get stuck. And in that kind of way that ghosts get stuck, yeah.
The Hawaii you've written about over the years is at odds with the fantasy of this idyllic mm-hmm. escape place. Do you feel it's important to convey the painful reality behind the paradise that the tourists see?
I think so. I think it's really important that we recognize and we see our own history and that we tell the story of our history and our time there, our grandparents' time there, our parents' time there in the islands, so that we have a recognizable face in the body of Asian Pacific literature.
Your first book was a poetry collection which won a lot of awards. Mm-hmm. You've written 7 novels, what is it, 2 or 3 children's books as mm-hmm. well. Do you continue to work in poetry? And do you think the poetry comes out of the fact that pidgin was your first language?
Yeah, I think pidgin is pidgin is poetry. When you speak in pidgin, when you hear pidgin, it's poetry.
Can you give
poetry.
Me an example?
When you say, hey, what you looking at? And where you like go? And what is all this? What is all this stuff going, you know? And it's this kind of language that it just kind of rolls and it has this sound and a fury and a beauty and a poignancy to it. But I was telling someone, it's hard to just kind of come out and say it. You got to say it to somebody else.
And I have to understand what you're saying, too.
Yeah, and you got to talk back. And then
the reason I've asked is because many people have told me that when they grew up with a different language, not pidgin, mm-hmm. but they grew up speaking Urdu, let's mm-hmm. say, and then wrote in English, that somehow that Urdu experience changed and enriched their English.
It does. And so, but to deny the sound of the word on paper is to also deny access to the emotion that may have gone along with those words.
Lois Ann Yamanaka's latest novel, her 7th, is Behold the Many. It is published by Farrah Straus and Giroux. Thank you so much for coming by
again.
Thank
you.